but actually is not made from urine. It is usually a synthetic ingredient. And from a chemist's perspective, there is a few different forms of it. And two of them being stabilizers or preservatives, and one of them being more for the humectant properties of it.
Welcome to Beauty Babble. We're doing another ingredient episode today. More specifically, we're talking about urea. And we're joined by Tara McIver, founder of Beauty Cult Canada. Hi, Suzanne. Hi, Tara.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us today, Tara. Suzanne, tell us how we got into talking about this ingredient in specific to kick us off.
Well, as a daily thing that happens around Beauty Cult is Tara and I get into these discussions all the time. And just out of that discussion, she brought this up, how it came across, and I'll let Tara dive into more of the details of it. But I said, you know, I think these are things that we should be telling people more about, because unfortunately, we can just go online and buy products and not realize it could be detrimental to our clients because it's actually not available in Canada. I'll speak for Canada and even some parts of around the world too, right? So it's knowing the differences in your ingredients. And we, you know, I keep hype, you know, talking about know your ingredients, know your brand, who, what they represent is a huge part of it. And I think that's what came down to Tara and I. And I said to Tara, like, you should come on and talk to us. And then I told Doreen, and Doreen said, yes, great idea.
And this is our second episode where we're talking about ingredients. And I think we're going to be making this a regular feature. We'll talk about an ingredient. So if any of our listeners have an ingredient that they've come across or one that they're curious about, let us know. And we can include that in our ingredient episodes.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. So Tara and I were chatting one day, and Tara does a lot of research. So when you hear a word, Tara, it usually takes you into this a depth of learning, a spiral of opening this and learning this and that. And I mean, thank God you do it, because as you know, you do import and bring in products into Canada, and you have to also be due diligent in your part as a business owner that it's legal in Canada, or when it becomes illegal in Canada. There's both sides to that, right? So yeah, start us off with this amazing ingredient.
Well, I'm always curious with some ingredients that are in skincare, Health Canada will restrict how much is used in a product. So then that triggers down where you fall down the rabbit hole of starting to research. And then I always like to look at things from like how a chemist would see it, as well as an esthetician or a dermatologist or a doctor or whatever, from all the different angles to see why there might be the controversy with something. And so then when you do that, when you start to see like how a chemist looks at it in the formulation, and when we first got into the skincare, I would always try to relate food. Lots of ingredients are food related, where you can like vitamin C or different super fruits or something that's in food, but this is one of those ones that's not. And so the initial thing is what people think of when they hear urea is, back when the war was on and soldiers were hiking through trenches and their feet were getting fungus or I don't like foot rot or whatever it was, and they were told to pee on their feet to try to help cure it. And so when people hear urea, they think pee, but it actually is not,
not
made from urine. It is usually a synthetic ingredient. And from a chemist's perspective, there is a few different forms of it, and two of them being stabilizers or preservatives, and one of them being more for the humectant properties of it. And so as soon as I started reading that there was more than one form of it and why it was restricted, the preservative form is more of an exfoliant. And so it's restricted because how much you're going to exfoliate. It would be like a chemical peel almost. Whereas the humectant part of it is probably more expensive as an ingredient. And that's usually the part of the the ingredient that we would want in certain products. So is to be able to help the skin hold the moisture, which is all these star ingredients, hyaluronic acid or sodium hyaluronate, all these ingredients to help our skin hold moisture is usually the part that we're looking for and the part that's probably more expensive in an ingredient. So as soon as this came up, I started scanning all of our products to see which form of the urea was in them. And luckily for us, the products that we had that had it was the humectant form, not just the stabilizing form of the ingredient.
I have a question for you. How do you know the difference between the two forms when you're looking at your ingredients?
So when you're looking at your ingredient list, first of all, you're going to look to see how high up on the ingredient list. That's going to help give you, like, if it's got more, if it's the next ingredient right after water, chances are there's a lot of it in there. And if it's lower on the ingredient list, then probably it's meeting its job and it's not going to be overly exfoliating. Or usually there's other ingredients in there that the humectant part of the urea is driving into the skin. So they kind of work together. So that's where the chemists come in. That's where the formulations are worked. But, and then I'm not going to read all the names out because I will butcher them, but
I can help you out. Is it the hydroxyethyl urea? That's the one that's the humectant, right?
Yes.
Yes. So right there is a good indication because hydro is at the beginning of it to try to remember that that's the one that's going to help with water. And then the other forms are going to be more antimicrobial. So those are going to help stabilize. Those are more of a preservative form of it. And with that, they help. Yes, they're good at preventing bacteria and mold and yeast or whatever from forming in the product. But they can also, in too high of a content in the product, can be overly exfoliating. So somebody who's already has skin sensitivities, it might be too much for them.
Also,
which is why Health Canada limits the amount that's allowed in product.
Yeah, and because it's more of a stabilizing preservative, then it's that other side that people should look at. It's a preservative, which isn't a good one to be using for us as humans, because our skin, as we know, absorbs everything. So, you know, it's toxic, even if it's a small amount. So
yeah, so that's even like, so thinking of that as a preservative, and then other preservatives are parabens. And if you listen to a chemist's version of having a paraben in a product, which now because of trends and consumer watchdogs, I guess, because it's consumers who are buying things that started not wanting parabens in their products, so chemists started to take them out. But in small amounts, they weren't like disruptors. The molecules in them were actually too big to be absorbed in ways that people thought they were, and they kind of dissipate on the surface of the skin but protect the product. So there's different ways of looking at it. But so urea is in too high of a quantity, the stabilizers defeat the purpose of what they're in the product for.
And I think you also hit it on the head that it'll come to cost. And a lot of product lines, if they can, I mean, we see it in many industries, we'll say, where they are changing the ingredients, they're changing it in many ways to cut back the costs. And I think that's why it's so crucial that we're trying to stay on top of this and keep learning. And well, that's why we're doing this podcast, is to try to share this information. So as Doreen mentioned before, right?
Yeah. And then having, because Suzanne and I recently visited France, and having a lab there with specialists where you can kind of ask them, you know, why is there only this much of this product? Like, it's so low on the ingredient list. And when the response is, you know, there's only so much the skin can absorb. And that is the advice of the biochemists and the chemists, in order for the best penetration into the skin, like the rest would be overkill. So it's not going to do anything. There's only so much that can be beneficial or penetrate.
And that's when you look at ingredients and they say, oh, this is really great because it has so much of this. But in the end, they know, the chemists know, as you said, the researchers, and if they've done their job, they know only a certain percentage is going to get absorbed by the skin too. So that could be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Like how we look at ingredients. I mean, we can start targeting a lot more ingredients on that topic of when you see them advertising their products to be at a certain
percentage. The most potent.
Yeah. Well, SPF is one. I'm not talking down to SPFs at all. They're amazing. But what's the difference between the 50 and 60 and the 75? Like, you know, really, I think that's a good one. Yeah, it's a few minutes more. So I think that's a good way for people to understand the importance of ingredients and how it can affect overall. So more is not always better. It's just, it could be a negative thing, or it could be it's not making a big difference. And they're going to charge you a lot more for it because it sounds like
higher concentration. So it's more expensive to make, but
yeah,
it could be a waste.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So with urea, is that in all kinds of products, or is it just specifically like more in skincare, or is there some in, like, I think we were talking about like some products in foot care, so it can be across the board really, so estheticians can just check any product line they have to look at their ingredients?
So that's the thing, if there's no ingredients on your packaging, you should not be putting it on your skin. With all the brands that we use, there's a trust in the manufacturer for guaranteeing that what they're putting on the packaging is what's actually in there. And they have a longevity in the industry to be trustworthy, I guess. And I know with access to online shopping, if you're not seeing what's in there, that you shouldn't be buying it.
Well,
lots of companies will just say the 3-star ingredients.
Yeah,
actually, I was approached by those little kiosks in a high traffic area, such as a mall or whatever. And they were trying to sell me or give me a sample of something that had diamonds. Diamonds was the main thing that they were saying was in it and how beneficial it was. The number one ingredient was mineral oil. That is a petroleum byproduct, cheapest ingredient to put in a product. So it doesn't matter how much diamond, it's that product's going to clog your pores. It's not going to benefit you. In fact, it could be carcinogenic. Who knows where they got their raw ingredients from?
And will it even absorb if they have mineral oil with all the other ingredients?
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what they say is in it. It's not going to benefit you very much. So that's the thing. And so I kindly handed them back the sample and said, no, this isn't for me.
Yeah, that's a good reminder, though, too, as professional estheticians, when they're talking to their clients, because their clients have access to all the products online as well. They're going to be walking through the mall, encountering the kiosks of products as well. And we've talked about this before. Our job as part of doing your treatment is to also educate on why we're choosing the products we're choosing. And if you don't want to, you know, if your client doesn't want to use what you have, like I would usually just, okay, well, look for this, or, you know, just to kind of make them more aware of actually checking ingredients as well.
Yeah, because that's one thing we get calls all the time, you know, do we carry this brand? Could we bring this brand in? And yeah, and I'll say, well, you know, I'll look and see, you know, if it's something good that you should be using on their skin. And probably 50% of the time, it's not that great for them. There's alternatives that would be better. And one of my, you know, going back to, you know, educating your client, one of my best scenarios that I don't know where I got it from, but I think especially for young people, if you went to buy a cell phone and the salesperson said, this is how you turn the phone on, here's the button, this is how you turn it on, and they couldn't tell you anything else about the phone. Would you want to buy that phone? Like if they, you know, if that's their job and they can't tell you what options does the phone have, what, you know, that's the same with an esthetician. If you're just going to tell them, oh yeah, you just put this on morning and night and you can't give them any other information, you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah. You're not doing your job really.
Yeah.
Well, in this day and age, like you need to step it up because your clients are way more knowledgeable. Not saying they weren't before. It's just, I don't think it was out there for them to find it as easily. And now people are very curious and they want to learn more and they care about their health and what are they putting on their skin.
Access to everything. Yeah. And with that, access to everything and what you thought at one time before they started selling the brand online could have been one thing. And then when they start producing for mass market, it becomes something completely different. So you should compare when you were buying it from an individual, that ingredient list compared to when it's starting to be sold on a mass scale. Is the ingredient list still look the same? Are those ingredients still in the same order on that list? Because when you're producing for global market and a generalized population where it's not going to disrupt in the same way that a professional product would, that mass production is more generalized. So it's more not to upset the skin one way or another.
And what you mean by mass production is that it's available all over the place, not yeah. that a company is global, but it's right. what's being distributed and where
right.
it's
when you
of it, right?
Walk into a place and you're not buying from somebody who has experience in the industry that's helping you, making recommendations for you. Most of the products aren't good. So I have dry skin. Most of the products that I could buy over the counter aren't going to disrupt that too much. If I'm buying something for oily skin from a professional and I have dry skin, it's going to, within a week, I'm going to be feeling it.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to have that dry skin, kind of like after the chemical peel I had a week ago. Like, finally have got rid of that dryness. Yeah. But that was on purpose.
I think that we did an episode about this too, where we talked a little bit more about it. And it was, you know, we call it retail giants, because when the product goes into retail stores, that's when it's no longer just professional. So for any of our listeners, they can go back. It's in season one, episode 13, where we really dive a little deeper into, you know, professional product versus retail giants and the products you can purchase there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have those notes of the names below, right, Tareen? You'll have those in there. And then this way people can look for it and know what to look for. And if you have questions, reach out to your brand. They should be able to give you this information as well. And or if you have the manual of your brand, you can easily look through all the ingredients because it should be in your hands as well. So there's the other thing. If they're not giving you all the details, that should be your first flag. But if they're giving you everything, and that's why it's trademarked and why it's protected, and how you handle it and what you do with it, and that's the brands will do, is that's one of the big reasons why they want to protect it too.
Going back to urea, just a couple things that are pretty amazing about that ingredient when you're using the right part of it is it is supposed to help with your barrier function. So it is usually for skin that could be compromised or, you know, it's irritated, or like your feet, rough heels or whatever, that it is, it does have the potential to help the barrier. And like I said, if they're using the right part, the humectant is going to help the hydrolipid barrier to hold moisture in a different way. And if you're using the part that's the exfoliating part, it could work almost like an acid, like salicylic or lactic, which is why Health Canada limits, I think it's up to 10% in a product. And then it is, there was another thing about amino acids. Where is it? It was really interesting.
like with urea or on its own? Because that's another ingredient we're going to.
No, it works like, sorry. They found a correlation between water content and amino acids. So basically, the more dehydrated and dry the skin, the lower its share of dissolved amino acids. So this is helping to strengthen that so that you're able to hold the moisture better.
Right. Cool. Well, that was interesting. Thanks, Tara, for joining us on this one. It's always helpful. And how much you dive into it, I know you're a wealth of knowledge that you do stand by your brands when you're bringing them in. And I think
this is funny what you find interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
And what you can do to try to help people. I know doctors sometimes will prescribe ingredients with urea in it. And for eczema patients, some of them doesn't work like it is supposed to work because it can be over exfoliating. So I do know that one of our business associates was hospitalized as a teen from a prescription of urea because it was too overly exfoliating for her skin. So I can see how that rough, patchy skin that you get when you have eczema, how a doctor would try to give you something to help take that off. But if it continues to exfoliate, it's going to be too much for the skin. And also not just for eczema patients, but patients with autoimmune disorders, diabetic, heart conditions. So if you're not sure, you should probably avoid it. Use something as an alternative.
And that's for the exfoliant one, not the humectant.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I think you can see where, you know, for pedicures, like helping remove that dead skin and even with an eczema patient, because sometimes it's a overactive flora on the surface of the skin. And so you can think that maybe that exfoliation, almost like it would work like a lactic acid or something, that it would help get rid of that rough skin. But if it continues to exfoliate, if it doesn't stop and hold the moisture, if there's too much of that stabilizing, exfoliating portion of the urea in it, it's gonna cause trauma to the skin. It's not gonna do what you think that it would do.
And when you say continues to exfoliate, is that because you're continuing to apply the product or as it's on your skin?
Well, I think some skin could handle it and some couldn't. So, and yeah, usually like in that type of setting, she was given a prescription and she was told how often during the day to put it on. So the constant reapplication, and she was a teenager at the time. So it got to the point where it was almost like burns, I guess, on the skin because it just kept overly exfoliating. I don't know if it would do it. I don't think it would do it one time, like if you did it in a treatment. But I think that's why Health Canada steps in and, you know, reduces the chances of this happening, especially in our industry. Sometimes you think, well, oh, that's not, you know, they only allow 2% of this or 10% of that. And if I just go down, you know, cross the border, buy it from online, I can get it. But in most situations, you'd be okay with it, but just takes that one skin that it's not okay with it. And you'd hate for you to be the reason that they ended up having to seek medical attention.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
The rules are there for a reason.
Yeah, sometimes it's frustrating because you think, oh, I could get this done so much faster if I could, you know, have it in 30% or 40% in the product. But
safety,
yeah, especially when you're passing on your information on to somebody else, those safety standards are a good guard, I guess, for contraindications, bad things happening when you're a professional, and it's not, you're not just using it on yourself. It's one thing to buy things and just use them on yourself when you're not sure about them, but it's another thing to tell somebody else to do it.
Absolutely. Well, I think this has been a very enlightening chat, and we'll be back with more episodes on different types of ingredients. But thank you so much for joining us today, Tara. We know you're busy. And we look forward to having you again on the show.
Thanks for listening to Beauty Babble.